Nigeria's fashion industry has undoubtedly made significant strides over the years. From Nigerian fashion designers gaining recognition both locally and internationally, especially for showcasing their creativity and innovation in the area of blending traditional African elements with modern aesthetics, to the growth of fashion weeks in major cities in Nigeria like Lagos and Abuja, as well as the increased use of social media, the emergence of fashion retail and e-commerce, and increasing awareness around sustainable fashion. The industry wields enormous potential for job creation and contribution to Nigeria's GDP. Hello, and welcome to Entrepreneurship Policy Pulse, Episode 4. My name is Amaka Wokolo. I head the Fade Institute, and I am your host. Today, we would be discussing factors that can enable the sustainable growth of the Nigerian fashion industry. Joining me to discuss this topic is Senior Research Fellow at the Fade Institute, Jonathan Ikeolumba. It's good to have you, Jonathan.
Hello, Amaka. It's such a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to a very great and exciting conversation.
Yay, that's what we like to hear. Jonathan is a certified chartered accountant and sustainability consultant with over 15 years experience working with different businesses and operating models. He is very passionate about solving complex business problems and helping businesses create value. He is a managing partner at Office Load Consulting, a finance and strategy consultant firm that has helped improve the business strategy of over 1,200 small businesses in Nigeria, including fashion and women-led businesses. It is great to have you again in the building, Jonathan.
Thank you so much.
Now, as part of your fellowship program at the Fade Institute, you developed a white paper looking at driving the sustainable growth of the fashion industry, making the case for female-led businesses, which we'll be discussing today. Now, let's start with an overview, shall we? How would you say the fashion industry has evolved over the last couple of years or even a decade?
Thank you, Amaka, for this sort of fantastic question and really an opportunity to share my insights on the research I did. I think the first thing I would say is to speak a bit about fashion really as a concept.
Okay.
So if you think about the hierarchy of needs for we as humans,
right.
Fashion ranks quite very high. So if you take away things like food, the next thing that comes off would be
clothing.
And right. such, that means fashion is really an essential part of our existence as humans.
Okay.
If I look at what has happened in the fashion space globally, then I'll bring it back to Nigeria, is so there's quite a change in business models around fashion. There's also conversations around the advancement of technology, how that's revolutionizing fashion, and also the conversation on sustainability and using eco-friendly materials for fashion.
Correct.
And if I look at what has happened in Nigeria, specifically, I would think the real change over the last decade has been we've heavily relied on imported fashion, but right now, over the last 12 years, we've seen a growth in tremendous growth in the amount of locally made fashion. And you know, it doesn't get bigger to know. If I tell you, Amaka, that we have a Nigerian fashion entrepreneur who clothed the first lady of the United States in America.
Yes, I saw that. It's very exciting.
And that's Folarin Coker.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's just an expression of how big we've seen, you know, female fashion entrepreneurs within the country.
Yes, yes. I totally agree, especially when you think of the big names. Some big names, I mean, Hollywood celebrities are rocking Nigerian brands, fashion brands. It's really exciting, from Michelle Obama, like you mentioned,
Beyonce,
to even Solange,
Rihanna, and a couple of them.
Yes, and so it's pretty exciting, especially because if we're looking at this some 20, 25 years ago, this wasn't the case. So it's very exciting to see our designers just gain that international recognition. Okay, so let's hop on the second question that I have, which is to say, what are some of those value chain options that you have seen emerge now that we're talking about this exciting development that has happened? As a result of this development, what do you think, or what would you say are some of those value chain options that have emerged?
So there are quite a lot of opportunities if you look at the fashion value chain, and I'll just explain them this way. So it starts with the design. Within the design space, which is really around things like illustrating or even just coming up with the way you want your fashion items to really pan out. And there's quite a lot of opportunities for people who just want to do fashion designing, even the design thinking around how the fashion items should look like.
Right.
Then the whole process around from the raw material stage, right? Sourcing for fashion materials, understanding what sort of materials will work for, what kind kind of fashion items, that's a very big opportunity. There are textiles, there are cottons, there are all sort of fabrics that go into fashion, and there's quite a lot of opportunity for people to play there.
Then, in terms of supplies,
yes, in terms of supplies. You move now to the core production, and you find a lot of people. I mean, that's where you find the tailors. You see people are actually transforming these raw materials to actual items, right? And just ensuring that, you know, sometimes there could be a cultural element. These are the kind of items we want to produce, you know. So there's that space. Then off the back of that will be the work around logistics. So where do we get these fashion items to? There are quite a lot of companies that, how do we source them? How do we, you know, sort of push them out? Then there's the marketing as well too. And social media is really aiding with, you know, the marketing of fashion products, even the use of influencers. So many influencers are out there using their followership to also drive, you know, the way we project our fashion. And then I think there's also that aspect around, you know, how we're also engaging with the final consumer, the fashion, those who actually buy the fashion items themselves. And even it speaks to things around communication PR. So I was saying that there are roles now like a fashion PR, there are roles like a fashion communicator, even content writing around fashion. There's that space for people to just blog about fashion, let consumers know what sort of fashion does exist, you know, new trends in fashion. So there's quite an ample opportunity if you look around the value chain where people can actually play very big in the fashion value chain.
I like the point you made around technology, right? Right from the design stage, you know, it seems to me that to even drop the sketch, you know, people are deploying apps these days. You know, you have softwares and all of that that just ease that process, make it, you know, more efficient, you know, and all of that. You talked about social media, you know, and for me, social media is even more interesting because, unlike before, where you would need models, you know, you need to put up a show to be able to get visibility for your products, now you can simply just create content and put it out there on social media. So I totally hear you in terms of how technology has contributed. But how else would you say technology has impacted the industry? I saw you smiling. So it feels like it's a really huge topic, right? But let's just touch on it slightly, shall we?
Yeah, so the list is quite endless. So interesting to know, you actually have what we call digital fashion. Superimposition of people on fashion wears. Right now, you can actually find pictures that people have on fantastic fashion dresses that are actually not real, right? Just people imposing themselves. I'll give you a very good instance. So you see a celebrity has gone for a very big major event, and that actual dress the celebrity has worn, you can actually superimpose yourself. So many people have dresses Beyonce has worn, Rihanna has worn, by superimposing themselves. So there's that fashion. I'd like you to, there's a popular site called Digital X, and they're doing a lot of work around digital fashion and just helping, you know, people with confidence around looking so good with fashion item by superimposing them in that. There's also the work around data analytics with fashion, right? So you can actually track the data of how people are engaging with your fashion items. You can track how many people are appealing, who want to demand, you know, views around what people are driving in terms of how much they need your product.
And so essentially that improves marketing because you're better able to understand your market, understand your customer demand, even segments, you know, how the market's responding, responding to you, to your products. I think that's fantastic.
Then e-commerce is actually very big.
Right? You can say that again. Huge.
One way to really get a global demand for your product. And Nigerians are actually, you know, selling their products across the globe.
Yes, we are.
Leveraging an e-commerce platform.
Yes, we are.
Interestingly,
yes,
I was speaking to someone and she wants to run a rental, an online fashion rental sort of e-commerce store where people will rent dresses, Nigerian made dresses, you know, for a fee, and then she sort of works out with logistic people how to return back those dresses, right? So there's all sort of those models that technology is also accelerating itself.
And just speaking around that, it's interesting to see how the point you just made around technology and e-commerce, you know, how through that avenue a lot of our fabrics, so Ankara is almost becoming mainstream. I mean, people can argue with me, but you're seeing this in Europe, you're seeing this, you know, in the US, just all over, and it's simply because technology has been able to bridge that gap. you know.
Maka, let me highlight this for you for that. So take, for example, the DG of the World Trade Organization, Ngozi Okonjo. She's never done any other thing other than, you know,
our Ankara
local
fabrics.
You
That's
can extend
correct.
That to even the United Nations Deputy Secretary General, Amina, always are done in our local dresses,
true.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you find that sort of, you know, across even the continent in itself, right?
Yes.
You know, Nigerian culture is being promoted, you know, Nigerian fashion. And it just speaks to the fact that fashion is really an expression of culture.
It is.
Right?
And very exciting.
One way to promote the Nigerian culture is through promoting our fashion industry.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jonathan. So let's quickly move forward and talk about female-led businesses, right? Your paper addresses, really emphasizes making the case for supporting and investing in female-led businesses. So let's start with the very first question that I have on my mind, which is, from your experience and from the research you've carried out, what would you say is the case for supporting and investing in female-led businesses? Or what are the unique points or characteristics you want to share that in your opinion would make an investor say, oh, you know what, I want to invest in a female-led business within the fashion industry?
Very interesting point, Amaka. I think the first obvious one is the population.
Mm.
If you think about Nigeria, depending on what data you want to rely on, anything around 200 to 220, you know, million people.
Right.
Statistics say out of that data, about 90% of that is female, right? Mm-hmm. So exactly the population really in the country is really female. And so one thing that really sort of justifies the point around having female-led businesses in the fashion space is the population you find, right, is quite, you know, female intensive. So that's one. Another thing around is that fashion also improves, you know, inclusion. And if you think about, you know, the prominence around culture and how people express themselves, we don't really think about the fact that, you know, females are quite underrepresented, right, in this space.
Okay.
So I think whether you want to promote that agenda around ensuring that there's inclusion in how we sort of expand our culture outside, so there's that argument for them. Another argument is the fact that, you know, the conversations around the United Nations SDGs and heavy on it, really, and that's SDG 4, is around ensuring, you know, we have gender equity. And really speaking to gender equity is also improving the amount of females who are empowered, you know, to be able to run businesses. Because fashion by its nature, it's a basic human need. And if you really want to drive, you know, economic activities, you've got to look at the very basic needs, and that speaks to fashion. And because the female represent that demography, so by having many female-led businesses in fashion, we're also solving the SDG, you know, goal.
Problem.
Right? So whether it's from an SDG perspective, from a market perspective, and also, you know, perspectives around inclusion, right? And if you think about fashion, really, for the male fashion, there's not quite a lot of diversity you find in the types of fashion, but for a female, there are so many things, right?
Right.
You know, from the casual dresses you find, there's all sort of variety. You know, women are, female are quite expressive, right? So I think there's a case for diversity.
Well,
as
maybe
well.
Not all of us, but a lot of women are expressive. Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that. Okay, but thank you for sharing those pointers. And so I think from my end, what I was going to reiterate, and because you probably have this in mind, is also speaking about the business part of it now, right? So a lot of female-led businesses or female entrepreneurs are considered to be better managers. And this is not me, because I'm female. This is data. There's data to back this, right? Showing that female entrepreneurs are great managers, are great with resources, being able to manage resources to do more, are great with their books, their finances. So you have data showing that when a woman borrows money,
she pays back.
For example, she pays back on time. She's detailed, you know, in doing all of that. And so, to your point, these are attributes that will make an investor smile and go, okay, yes, I'm willing to work with this individual. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with you. The data, and we have a report already from the Faith Institute around, you know, challenges and opportunities with female-led businesses. So I think generally we agree that female are better managers.
Okay.
And if this sort of space is quite a very big one, the more you have female managing this various businesses around this space, I think that even speaks to sustainability of this space. So I agree with you.
Thanks, Jonathan. And the paper that Jonathan was referencing, a white paper we developed at the Faith Institute, can be accessed at www.faithfoundation.org/research. Moving on quickly to my next question, Jonathan, what would you say are the challenges within the fashion industry, especially when we look at the topic of what we're discussing, sustainable growth? So what are the challenges that sort of impede that in the industry?
Okay, so I think there are two sides to this conversation. One are challenges within the industry, then you also have female-specific challenges, right?
Correct.
So let me start with the general challenge. So I think the very basic one is really around, you know, access to finance. When I speak and when I also, you know, sort of interviewed quite a couple of people and I looked at the businesses, quite innovative, but what was limiting their ability to expand? And many of them cited issues around, you know, access to finance and really the cost, even when they could, the cost of the finance.
And
also too is the amount of what I'll call training and vocation centers, you know, primarily designed to encourage fashion education. I don't think we have a lot of that. I see pockets of different fashion entrepreneurs accommodating fashion training as part of their offering, but we don't have a lot of that, right? So how many fashion schools do you find in Nigeria strictly just focused on just empowering people around practices around fashion? You don't find that. You find people study fashion in universities in Nigeria. You don't find that, right? So these are quite very central. If we see how big this industry can be, we should be having people study courses like fashion, you know, at university levels. You know, that in itself will encourage detailed research work around how to sort of scale the opportunities you find with fashion.
And structure,
structure.
I think, within the industry as well, because then we can even have, I mean, if you just think of someone going to school to read maybe fashion technology. So it's not just looking at technology as a whole, but looking at how specifically how technology can, you know, impact the fashion space or fashion photography or, you know, or something.
So it is
broad. And I think that, yes, to your point, it would bring a lot of structure into the industry as well. So thank you very much for sharing that. So looking at female-led challenges specifically now, what would those challenges be?
So when I think about the challenges specifically for female going into the fashion space, so I think for me, the first one will really be around, you know, perception. So for example, you don't find many female businesses designed to have, you know, that sort of flexibility in operating hours that might stretch to very late. You naturally have to think about a female-led business as also one that also thinks about the kind of flexibility that the female who runs this business should have. So you don't want to have a situation where at pressured periods, maybe periods like the festive periods, you have females running these businesses who also have also personal needs that they have to attend to. So I think there's that cultural issue around, you know, promoting female who can really drive businesses for those kind of hours, because sometimes fulfilling the needs
of a customer
for a customer can be quite
demanding
as well too. I also think another problem in itself is that fashion is cyclical. And what you tend to find, and the research confirms that, is that after a period, I mean, so maybe every 20 years, we invent back the same fashion, right? And that in itself speaks to creativity and innovation. Do you find a lot of, you know, female-led businesses making those investments around research that, you know, needs to happen, going back in time to do some of those things? I think that that's also one of the sort of challenge I see. Another big challenge that I see would also speak to things around corporate governance. I don't know what the data would speak to, if you would find many of these sort of female-led fashion businesses strengthening, you know, you spoke about structure, right? And also strengthening their corporate governance. So I think we need to improve that. There's also conversations around management and, you know, business management and business literacy.
So I think that while there's improvement with women or female-led businesses, you know, instituting corporate governance and just taking more business management courses, there's definitely room for improvement, right? So to your point, if you're looking to access funding, which from like what you said is not just what you said, but what the data also shows, is that it's one of the major issues within the space. Corporate governance is essential to being able to attract investors or just people who are willing to give you money, right? So I definitely think that that's an area that can be improved for female-led businesses on that point. So moving on very quickly, let's talk about solutions now, or recommendations to driving sustainable growth within the industry. We've talked about some of the challenges. Let's talk about some of the solutions or recommendations from your research.
Okay, so I think one obvious one from my research is access to what I'll call skilled labor. So quite a lot of, you know, fashionpreneurs have actually complained about getting, you know, local artisans, you know, local people to work with them. I think that's one. Mm-hmm. Another one is I think we should have a lot more what I would say fashion incubation hubs, right? Okay. That can essentially speak to anyone who just has a flair for fashion, and especially for female entrepreneurs, come in, learn a bit around capacity building, you know, learn a bit around structure, and then maybe they could be paired with, you know, finance in itself. So mm-hmm. once you just have that innovative idea around mm-hmm. how you want to go into a fashion business, having incubation hubs that can sort of help you.
That would also address the capacity building exactly, issue you mentioned.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly. And I'm looking at the width and the breadth of the country, right? Mm-hmm. We should have this not just in the capital or the sort mm-hmm. of urban areas, but really across the nooks and crannies of the country. Okay. I think there's also a case for fashion exports, you know, policies that ensure we can promote the intentional promoting our fashion mm. Across, you know, the country, and policies that will engender that we can support fashion exports. Mm. I think we have a big demand, you know, outside of the country for our products.
Yes,
but
if
we can have policies that also ensure that we can support that.
Right.
There's also a case around intellectual property.
Okay.
One of the things you find when you speak to some of them is, look, this was my idea, I think this person has stolen my idea, so I think we can do a bit better with strengthening intellectual property,
right?
Because this is really a creative business.
It is. I'm quite tricky, I must say. I mean, with music or with a movie, it's easy to sort of say this was mine, but for a design concept, you know, but I hear you, and that's something, like you say,
people
need to work on.
They trick mark their designs, actually.
Exactly. So that's the point I think a lot of entrepreneurs need to take to heart and work on and work at. So let's talk about sustainability.
I agree.
And I know you're very passionate about this, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that we see evolving within the space. So when we talk about ESG, we see that evolving within the space. So what are your thoughts on that and on how it's evolving, and maybe even the future, what we hope to see?
Okay, so there's a data from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation that suggests that fashion is the second biggest emitter of waste.
Mm.
If you take away food waste, the next biggest waste you find in human nature is really fashion.
Mm.
And that in itself speaks to the design around how we produce fashion items.
Right.
There are concepts now such as fast fashion, where essentially mm-hmm. you know, people use substandard, or what am I saying, low-grade materials in producing fashion.
Okay.
And just to tell you how big that problem is where these sort of items end up, you know. So you find very inferior materials being used for fashion because we are trying to drive the concept of consumerism, people wanting to buy. And so what then happens with this fashion waste? Could we sort of think about how we can design our fashion products for durability, for recycling, right?
So I
was speaking to a fashion entrepreneur who was saying that she offers, as part of her offering, a service where essentially you can bring back items that were worn by your mom, and then she can sort of remake those items again, right? And there's element of pride and emotions that goes with that as well too. And there are lots of people who look at fashion items and they off-cut and they waste from their fashion items, and they can use that to making bags, to making shoes, even as gifts. I know of a particular fashion entrepreneur I spoke to who gives out gifts in festive periods off on the back of the waste and the off-cuts from our fashion items.
Oh, wow.
So the point is that fashion is a big emitter of waste, and we can actually design products and design our fashion items in a way that will reduce that waste. We can also speak to the durability. And there are even conversations around even the supply chain around fashion. So you find that there's also an increase, especially in this part of the world, in underage children being a part of the process, right?
Wow.
So for example, you look at things like, I mean, just go to the typical informal markets you find in Nigeria, right? You find that even the ladies who sort of sold the items are underage children, right? Even people who help with selecting the buttons, right? So there's all that conversation around unskilled labor, but more importantly is underage people. These are sustainability conversations.
Issues. And do you think that there's a growing consciousness around sustainability within the industry? It appears that there is.
I think so.
I
think that there are quite a lot of advocacy organizations pushing for
speaking
to that. Okay. It's also linked as well to an SDG, SDG 11. I also think as well too that even from the perspective of many national and, you know, sort of state governments, they're actually making pronouncements around this. I think it's a collective responsibility, you know, both from the business and from the government as well.
Right. Thank you very much for sharing and just shedding light on that. And so on the final notes, we're bringing this to a close, and we usually like to end on a policy note, right? Yeah. So when we think about policy recommendations, what would you say or encourage the government to focus on to drive sustainable growth within the fashion industry?
I think for me is the government should make an effort in standardizing all the actors within the space.
Okay.
I think we can have, like, you know, a body where that encompasses all aspects of fashion. We can call them maybe the Fashion Association of Nigeria or the fashion players. We can just have all of them come together in one umbrella, discuss on the issues around standardization. I also think too, we need a lot of events that showcase our Nigerian fashion. So maybe return of the Fashion Week. I know we do have the Lagos Fashion Week here. We also have a Fashion Week in Abuja.
Right.
But it would be nice to find this replicated across all the 36 states. Maybe perhaps even a National Fashion Week. Nigerian Fashion Week. And for me, it's a deliberate effort at just ensuring that we are promoting Nigerian fashion.
Yes, I know that there was a Buy Made in Nigeria campaign that was on a few years back. That's something the government probably needs to emphasize or reintroduce, and this time being a bit more intentional around that. But I also hear you in terms of standardization, and there was a point you made earlier around data. So I think that maybe the government even needs to map the fashion industry so that we have data on who the players are within the space and what kind of policies do we need to design. So if we're talking about access to finance, we need data to be able to design finance specifically for the fashion industry. If we're talking about technology, how would that play in, how would that fit in? And data could be essential to designing policies that would just enable the sustainable growth of the fashion industry in Nigeria. Okay, so on that note, any final thoughts from you, Jonathan, before we draw the curtain?
Yeah, I just want to say that the fashion industry is a thriving industry globally, and I think it can only get bigger. Like I said, it addresses a basic human need. I think if we think about the complexities that Nigeria does have, I think the fashion industry can be a rallying and unifying factor in terms of national peace and harmony, because we can use our fashion industry to express, you know, our diversity as a country. And I think that having female-led businesses can be, you know, a sort of foundation to achieving that sort of cohesion.
And on that note, thank you very much, Jonathan. This has been Entrepreneurship Policy Pulse, and I have been speaking with Jonathan Ikilumba, who is a Senior Research Fellow at the Fade Institute, and we have been discussing driving the sustainable growth of the fashion industry in Nigeria. Until the next episode, bye for now.